Welcome to The Barbell Strikes Back. I'm your host, James McDermott, and joining me today is Catherine Toniati Janulevich. Catherine is a professional strongwoman, and in 2018, she placed fifth at the Pro Women's World Championships. She's competed at big events such as the Arnold Championships, Nationals, and also other World Championships events. And I'm super excited to talk all about strong woman training and competition with Catherine. Catherine, how are we doing?
Good. I'm great, James. How are you?
Good, good. Just trying to keep training going myself. How's training going with you?
Surprisingly, very good. I'm lucky. I've been competing in strongman for 10 years. So in 10 years, I have accumulated a lot of equipment. So things have been mostly business as usual, but just in my garage.
That's the nice thing when you're in the game for so long, you just accumulate all these toys. Like I don't have like equipment, but you know, I'm big on like mobility things. So I have like way too many foam rollers and sticks and other, like things that are not as cool as what you have. What kind of things do you have in that garage there?
So I have a log, I have three kegs, I have an axle, a barbell. Let's see, just turn and look. Oh yeah, I have a dumbbell. My piece de resistance is I bought a stone of steel. It's actually a plate loadable stone, so I can actually still do stone.
Oh wow! Oh, I remember that when you brought that to the gym. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to bring that. I used to tote that every Sunday to Albany CrossFit.
Yeah. So part of strongman training is you have to lug all the equipment around and do strongman training to start your strongman training.
Exactly. It was like the best warm up was just setting up.
Yeah, that's the best way to warm up. Did you empty those kegs yourself with your husband? Is that a good way to get a keg?
No, we didn't. We didn't. It was someone from Albany CrossFit. Oh, I can't think of his name right now. But he worked, I think, for DeCrescenti, and he got me a few beat up ones for free. So.
Oh, cool. All right. So if you need kegs, just. That's the nice thing about strongman equipment, from what I remember, is if you need a keg, just contact like a beer supply place and be like, hey, do you have any beat up ones that you don't want? And they'll give it to you. Contact a tire place for tires. Yep. Like people are looking to get rid of this stuff. So it's very low barrier to entry.
You can probably get tires for free. People will just with tires. It's a little tricky. You have to. If you can try the tire out, it's important because tread wear is important. How low to the ground it is. Something that's 700 could end up being easier to flip than something that's 400, depending on the tread of the tire and how it's, you know, how low to the ground it is, kind of its dimensions.
That's important to know. Right there. Yeah, no, that's a great tip. You know, I mean, you don't want to get stuck with a lame tire, you know, that you can't even flip.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you say dumbbell, like if for anyone listening, this is not an ordinary dumbbell. This is a giant dumbbell that you add weight to, right?
Yeah, mine is plate loadable. So one of the bells is about this wide.
About a foot?
It's probably about 10 inches in diameter. And then the bell, the total bell is probably, looking at it, it's probably about 30 inches long. So it's very long, and then each of the bells is very wide.
So it's this huge dumbbell. It's kind of like, you know, it's as close as you can get to like when you're watching professional strong men and women on TV, you know, hoisting those giant things over their head. This is what you're using to train and adjust for different types of loads.
Right. It's kind of, it looks more like if you think of like those old timey circus dumbbells, like Louis Cyr, with the big round. This one is round, but it's kind of supposed to mimic that really awkward, big, cumbersome thing that they did back in the old days when, you know, I think strength equipment was just whatever they could kind of throw together.
Yeah, like, hey, do you think you could pick up that horse? Yeah, I think I could pick up that horse. Let's do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know if you've definitely have probably been following all of this. We've talked about it on a couple shows already on the podcast, so I'm excited to get your opinion. What's your opinion, Catherine, going into the Eddie Hall versus Thor saga? Should a record be able to be set in your gym? Like right now, can you just set a record there and it'll count. Like, is that a cool thing to do? What do you think about all this?
Oh, for me, like today, if I wanted to set the dumbbell world record, could I? I don't know. I mean, the way Thor did it was with big fanfare. I mean, he had, you know, a professional judge, professional, you know, like media team there. They weighed every single plate. I watched it. He weighed every single plate on a scale. I personally think that Thor's record is legit. I don't know. If I wanted to do it today, I feel like I would need a judge, like a sanctioned judge. I would need to weigh everything. Would that count as a world record? I don't know.
So this is interesting. Now, as a competitor and a professional, you feel that his record is legit, even though it was done outside of competition. But for yourself, you wouldn't feel it would be legit for you?
Well, if I had the backing of, I think he had the backing of World Ultimate Strongman. They were kind of funding it. So they are their own federation. So it would kind of be like if I wanted to pull a world record deadlift of like the IPF saying, yeah, you go for it. We're going to send a judge there. We sanction this. Do it. Weigh everything and do it. Then, yes, I do personally. I mean,
okay.
Is weighed, if there's a judge there, because I think there needs to be a judge. You can't just judge yourself. Then I think I could. So if Rogue was like, hey, Kat, if you do this, you get a judge, you weigh everything, everything's filmed, and you send it to us. Then I think, yeah, because, you know, I mean, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I guess
especially in these times, right?
Like, yeah, this is an official statement on the podcast. Rogue, if you're listening, we're going to need judges in Albany, New York. We're going to need some equipment out here, you know, so it's all standardized. And we'll pick a record and Kat will go for it. Kat, if you were going to, like, what's one record where you're like, man, I wish my name was attached to that. I would love to be able to have the ability and go for that.
Dumbbell press. I would say dumbbell press followed closely by stone over bar.
Ooh, I know you're a big fan of stone over bar. I remember we used to do those a lot in Albany.
Yeah, I love stones. I mean, yeah, to have that title like Queen of the Stones, that's huge.
Yeah, but that just sounds badass. That'd be a cool t-shirt too.
Yeah. A dumbbell is a little bit, I don't know. It's close to my heart because when I started with it, I was so terrible. It took so much just drilling technique, lightweights to get it. And now I feel like it's one of my best overhead lifts. And so it's like has a close place in my heart. So I feel like that's like the number one I'd love to go for.
What are the current world records for those two events? You know, off the top of your head?
I do. So for women, I believe Kristen Rhodes and Donna Moore, I think they both share it. 175, or did they break it recently at 180?
So that's a dumbbell that weighs 175 to 180.
Yeah, that is a Rogue Circus dumbbell, and the one that they use, I believe they had to use the 12 inch because they load it with like lead shot. It's not plate loadable, so those bells are to get it to be able to be that heavy. They're quite big.
Wow.
And then the handle, I think, is almost 3 inches in diameter. And I have used a 3-inch diameter handle, and that is no joke. Because if you don't land like this, if you land like this, that's going to roll.
Yeah, you have to have your hand completely bent all the way back.
Yeah, perfect positioning. You have to be so strong. So, yes, it's either 175 or 180 for women on that. And then for stones, I believe it's 324, I think, was set at the last Rogue record breaker. And wow. No tacky.
No tacky to let it stick to your forearms or anything like that?
Yeah, I think they were only allowed, it's like golfer's grip tacky. It's kind of like if you get a little maple syrup on your hand, it's like just a little sticky, you know. But pine tar tacky, when you see like the big guys go for it, that stuff, I mean, you couldn't pick something up and then put it down. You'd have to pry it out of your hand. It's so, so, so sticky. It's pine tar.
It would just be stuck to you. Yeah. What's the height that they have to get that 300+ pound stone over?
48 inches.
Okay, that's quite the distance.
Wow. It's sometimes when you're looking, you're like, oh, this isn't that high. But then once you have the stone in your lap, you're like, oh my God, that's a long way.
Yeah, it seems like a mile. Well, I have a video that I'm going to post later today of myself doing like an over the bar medley from back in this old strawman class of just kegs and sandbags. And it literally is when you have that heavyweight in your lap and you look up and you see the bar and you're like, I don't know how I'm going to get it up over that thing. It's quite the experience.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Loading events. I love them.
Well, let's go back in time a little bit. I want to go back to first, we kind of have to figure out when you started at Albany CrossFit and kind of started your journey, and that can segue us into strongman. Let's dive into the origin story for Catherine, the professional strongwoman.
Well, so the origin story, like, it really begins when I was like 14 and 15 and I would binge watch like strongman on ESPN. So I just was a fan for so long. I bought off eBay like illegally like made CDs. From ESPN, so I could watch all the old stuff, and I would watch them over and over and over. And I would beg my dad. My dad took me to Boston a few times to go see like all my favorites compete. So that started the love of strongman. But I never could get into lifting weights because I had no clue how. I didn't know who to talk to, where to go. Internet was in its infancy, so you couldn't just like Google things.
Yeah, there wasn't YouTube and all that stuff.
Yeah. So you know, I went to college and, you know, I just was a fan. And then after college, I was a collegiate rower. After college, I stopped. I got really out of shape. And I was like, you have wanted your whole life to lift weights. Why don't you just Google how to lift weights? Like, where do I go? And I Googled it and I came upon a Craigslist ad that Albany CrossFit, Jason Ackerman, had placed that said, oh, you want to get in shape, learn weightlifting. And I looked at that ad and I was like, that's everything. That's all I want.
I can't believe we had ads in Craigslist.
It was a Craigslist ad for Albany CrossFit. And so I called up that day. And then I think maybe a day later I went and they put me through 3 rounds of the CrossFit warm-up. And I almost died because I was really out of shape. And the next day, Jason said, I thought for sure after that you were done. You hated it. And I was like, I loved it. And I signed up. I signed up that day, like right after I had calmed down from that workout and was like, okay, I feel better.
So this was just the warm-up. There wasn't like a WOD after it. You just did the 3 rounds of push-ups, dips, the things like that.
It was like, I think we did maybe some wall balls, some air squats, some pull-ups, some push-ups. I don't even remember what the whole thing was. But at the end, I was on the floor just dying. I was so out of shape. And at the time, I had gained a lot of weight. I weighed like 275 pounds. And I hadn't been doing anything. So I was very out of shape. I did jumping pull-ups. That took it out of me, you know, those little stuff right in a row. But when I finished, I was like, this is just what I need. I need to be pushed. I need someone there who will encourage me. And then just the fact that I was going to be able to learn how to lift a barbell and lift weights, you know, what I've always wanted to do, you know, for the last decade, it sold it to me, you know. And it was the best decision I ever made, signing up.
Definitely. And it's this was back during a time when it was probably in just one racquetball court, right?
You had just, I think, expanded. This was 2008. You had just expanded to a second, but they were not connected. So there was two single courts available. This was November 2008, October 2008.
So that's pretty much like a year after the gym opened. So that's pretty cool. That's not too far off. And then how long after that, you know, you're probably doing CrossFit workouts, getting into the barbell stuff, getting coached by Jay and other people. how long until you found Strongman? Was there Strongman equipment laying around at the time?
There wasn't. It was actually about, we'll say 2 years, because it was 2010. And, you know, I had told, you know, Jason all about how much I love Strongman, and that, you know, that's why I wanted to lift weights. So he knew. And then Rob Orlando had just started his Strongman, I think, certifications and his seminars. And Jason signed us up right up. And, you know, he came to me and he's like, you know, do you want to come? And I was like, oh my God. Like, and that was like, it was like a weird epiphany. Like, I can do Strongman. Like, I'm just, you know, a girl, you know, I'm not one of the big guys. There's Strongman for me.
was there, you know, like, not to cut you off, was strong woman a thing back then? Or is that, did that come later?
It was, but it wasn't like its own sport to my knowledge. Cause like when I watched it, they had like the World's Strongest Woman competition on ESPN a few years, and then it kind of went away. I think it was more like people from other sports, just invite the best of everybody and have them kind of throw down these strongman-esque workouts or, you know, competitions and events and see kind of who comes out on top. And I think some of them did train some strongman things, but it wasn't like its own entity as big as it is now. I think by the time I entered, I think strongman in the US was, for women, I think was a little bit in its infancy. It certainly existed. But I think very few took part because nobody knew about it. And even since I've been doing it, it hasn't even quadrupled. I mean, the amount of women, it's times 10, it's crazy. But yeah, 2010, that Rob Orlando seminar, that's when I realized and I figured out how I could get into the sport.
Very cool. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, the famous photo of you. I remember when I first found Albany CrossFit, you know, I looked at all of the coaches' bios and you had this photo of you with a stone in your lap. And I was just like, oh my God, like they do stuff like that at Albany CrossFit. Mm-hmm. So your photo sold me a lot on as well, wanting to come to Albany CrossFit. Cause I was like, I've never done that before. And then I started looking at more photos, and there were sleds, there were logs, there were handles. And really, like, that of course drew me in more so than like, oh, look, they do burpees, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so I was like, oh, like that's going to be such a cool summer if I can go there and intern and learn how to do all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we went to that seminar and I think Jason bought out whatever he could. We brought back a couple of logs. We brought back stones, kegs, farmer's handles, a yoke. So he was fully behind it. And from then on, basically, I started training the strongman about 3 days a week, still doing some CrossFit. But that's really when kind of my training shifted.
So like what did you feel, you know, if you remember, like all of a sudden day one, it's you're done with the seminar and now you're training strongman and you're like, I can't believe this. Like I am standing in front of a bunch of stones and logs and other things like that. And it's all mine, so to say, you know, like I can do this and then I can bring other people into it. What was all that like?
At first I was almost surprised. I don't know why. Like when we got back from the seminar and Jason was like, I want you to, you know, we've done the seminar, we've learned it. I want you to coach, you know, the women's class. I was like, whoa, me? Like I was like, oh man. So at first I felt a little bit over my head because while I had learned a lot of these techniques, I was new to coaching. And so then I started to kind of delve into, you know, how do you run a class? You know, how do you program? So that kind of sent me down a wonderful rabbit hole of learning that. But I was a little shocked that he had considered me. And I'm just really happy that I kind of ran with it. A lot of the stuff, I mean, we learned a lot at the seminar, but then there was a lot, because I didn't have a coach. There was a lot I learned kind of on the fly. Just doing things over and over again, you know, watching videos and things. It was a really great experience. And yeah,
that's typically how it was back then. You know, like a lot of people don't realize that there weren't always like so many coaches around on mm-hmm. so many different things, and not everyone had taken all the seminars yet. You know, right. So like if Rob Orlando had just started up his strawman seminar, well, only so many people have right. done it. Then only yeah. so many people are going to have the equipment. And we were just so fortunate to have that stuff. I kind of mm-hmm. feel like it that's if strong man and strong woman wanted, they could like take over the world, you know, like there could be strong, like it's so cool. Like your class had such a huge population of people wanting to do it. And I'm like, why aren't there strongman gyms everywhere and like a big box of just tons of stones mm-hmm. and tires and stuff? Like, why is that? Why isn't it as prevalent?
I think there is this feeling like how CrossFit is for everyone and it's infinitely scalable. I think that there is this perception that strongman isn't that way, but strongman absolutely is that way. Strongman is for everyone. It is infinitely scalable, just like CrossFit is. And I don't know if there's some attitudes in strongman. I haven't really seen these, but that like strongman is, oh, it's for the elite people. Like you have to be super strong to do it. Everyone I've met and myself personally, I feel like everyone can benefit. I mean, we had stones that were like 30 pounds. I mean, you know, you can have kids, you could have, you know, people who, you don't have to have a 300 pound deadlift. Maybe you only have a 100 pound deadlift. You could lift a 30 pound stone. You know, you can do strongman. You can scale things. You could even do stones with a wall ball if you needed to. So I think the perception is it's not for everyone. And I think it's a little bit scary, you know, to lift these weird, odd things. And people think that they can't do it. But just from experience, I feel like pretty much everyone can participate in strongman on some level.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this conversation with people before. It's almost like strongman is more CrossFit than CrossFit is. Like if you look at the definition of CrossFit, you know, mm-hmm. on just being functionally fit and ready for anything, well, then of course, picking up all these different types of objects would prepare you for that more so than like only doing deadlifts with, let's say, a barbell, mm-hmm. you know, right. which is what most CrossFit gyms have. But now if you're picking up a keg, a stone, flipping a tire, doing all these things and a barbell every now and then mm-hmm. now when you have to pick up your kid and go run or something, you know, like you're going to be a little more prepared for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of takes it like to the next step because a perfectly balanced barbell, you know, that's one thing. But when you have a odd shaped box or something you need to move in the garage, you're like, how do I pick this up? If you know how to pick up a stone or a keg or a sandbag, you can pretty much translate that very easily to an odd shaped box or something that you need to, you know, move up and down the stairs or to a different location. It's kind of like that next level of functional.
Yeah. I mean, it teaches you strategies, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. How do I solve this problem? Well, if right. all of your training is perfectly balanced, then how are you going right. to be prepared to solve an unbalanced problem?
Right. Exactly.
I suppose too, it's like maybe some people think, okay, if I go to a strongman gym, everyone's going to look like the mountain, you know, when mm-hmm. you walk in there. And that's probably scary thing. Too, when like the instructor dude is like 6'7" or 7', 400 mm-hmm. pounds, you know, barely speaks any English. It's probably, you know, tough for some people to get around that.
I think that is the perception. I like to think that I'm fairly unassuming and easy to talk to, and I'm not like, I don't scare people away. Maybe that's why we had such a big group. But yeah, those days of those 20, like we would have 20 to 25 people in strongman class. It was just, that was like,
oh, yeah.
that was the peak. Like it didn't get better than that.
No, and it would be at like odd times, like on a Sunday morning, you know, like, yep. Sunday morning, like 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. when everyone wants to be sleeping, there'd be like 20, 25 people there all just flipping tires and doing stuff. And I posted a group photo on my Instagram of you and a couple of the people from the strongman oh, yep. crew. And I wasn't joking when I said, if I could go back in time and take that class again, I totally would. Those were the most fun classes I've ever taken in my life. Mm-hmm. And I've taken a lot of classes, and it's like, just remember like just all the things we used to do with the stone over the shoulder, the heavy farmer's carries, the yoke carries, just all the stones and the tire flips. That stuff was so much fun.
Oh yeah. There's definitely days that I long for that. Like just to go back and to have a class to coach and just, it was so rewarding. I think every coach probably feels this, but it's really rewarding when you're coaching someone, and you know, they're not getting it. And then all of a sudden it's like, they get it. And then they are so happy. I miss that. The fun of that. It was really great.
It's a great feeling. What kind of things did you learn from coaching others? So like, obviously, you know, Jay threw you into it. He's like, hey, I want to do a class. You're going to be the coach. And you're just taking this seminar. And, you know, like, I know how things were back then at certain points. You probably got some instruction, but it was probably like a lot up to you to figure it out. Like what did you learn through years of coaching other people?
First I learned like class management. Like you have to kind of schedule things and you have to tell people what to do very clearly. Or people are just kind of gonna, you know, everyone's at the gym to have fun. They're just gonna kind of have fun and not listen. So class management was like the very first thing I learned how to master, how to segment things, how to, you know, clearly lay out the class. This is what we're going to do. Then I kind of learned that you can't treat everybody the same, you know, over time. You kind of have to very quickly kind of see what kind of athlete that you're working with and kind of adjust to that. So the same coaching style is not going to work for, you know, this person, that's going to work for that person. And so just kind of like defining like what can I say to this person to help them improve their technique, but something that's going to get through to them personally. So I learned a lot of that. Kind of how to talk to people, how to get the best out of people. And then I also learned kind of on the fly, like how to program things. Cause at first when I started programming, it's like, you can put something down on paper and it looks like a good workout and then you will do it and you'll be like, oh, I have made a mistake here.
Yeah, disaster.
It took a few months to kind of, and when the class first started, I would be coaching. And then I would, most of the stuff I wouldn't do, but every once in a while I would do some things with them. And so I kind of experienced that, the experience of the looks good on paper, doesn't look so good when you're doing it kind of thing. So I got much better at programming workouts that were effective, that were not, you know, you don't want to give something to someone that's like too much. Cause then they just feel like they failed. I feel like sometimes.
Yeah. Especially with when you're trying to like, okay, you're trying to flip that tire and you just don't have anything left. And it's very defeating when you're like, it's one thing when you try to lift a barbell and it doesn't go. It's another thing when you've already flipped it twice or three times and you have to do it like 10 more times, you know, and it just won't go and you just can't get it. Right. And there's a different type of frustration that I remember that comes when you hit the wall in strongman.
Right. Yeah. Things can go away very, very quickly sometimes. I think the best thing I learned is kind of how to talk to people and how to kind of get the best out of people. That's something I think I've actually learned that while coaching. And then I've kind of learned that I've taken that into like my own life outside of the gym. That has helped me personally. So
Is that because are you maybe more of an introverted type of person and coaching, just you're there, you have to do this, you have to help these people, it brought that out of you?
Absolutely. I'm definitely the person that can just sit home, and I love to sit home and just hang out. I'm not an extroverted person. I'm not the person that like comes into the room and can talk to anybody. But when you're a coach, right, you're the person that they're looking up to. You can't be timid. You can't be shy. You can't say, well, we're going to do this way. You have to be, you know, very definitive and very confident so that your athletes trust you. Because if they don't trust you, then they're not going to want to do what you're asking them to do. So I think there's this really nice trust between athlete and coach. So that really brought that out of me, to be able to talk to people and coach. And now I feel something. At the start, I didn't feel this way, but now I feel like, you know, I could go walk into any CrossFit and they could say, hey, could you coach, you know, could you coach this person to do a stone? And I could right away, you know, just introduce myself to that person, just a little bit, get to know them, and then be able to coach them effectively, to lift that stone. Whereas before I might've been a little intimidated.
Yeah. It's funny how this craft changes you as a person, mm-hmm. you know, and it probably the training you were doing helped with some of that as well. Like the mm-hmm. barbells and hard training and things like that certainly make you more, you know, stronger for certain situations. You're like, well, hey, I just PR'd my deadlift yesterday, man. I can talk to those three people, you know, but it's also like, you know, like you said, people are coming to you. You are the person who is front and center and you need to perform now. You need to be able to do this. And that's, then you can maybe channel some of that mentality that you took from training into that mm-hmm. and help those people. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way.
Yeah. And the funny thing is I'm in sales. So an introvert in sales, right?
Yeah.
But I'm in like biotech sales. So I deal a lot with like researchers and labs. I almost feel like the coaching, like it helped me talk like in my sales job, like it helped me be more effective there, because it's very easy to be intimidated because you're just dealing with extremely smart people all day. So I actually, it has helped me in my job as well. I feel like it broke me through that a little bit when I would be afraid, sometimes to initiate things, with researchers, but now,
Yeah, if you could talk me into picking up a giant keg and throwing it over a bar or someone else to put a heavy weight on their back and walk across the parking lot, then that certainly would lead into that. What type of things are you trying to sell?
So we sell something it's fairly niche. So we monitor cells in culture using electrical currents. So you would grow your cells on gold electrodes that we provide, and then our system runs a weak electrical current through that gold electrode. And so then as the cells change, depending on how you treat them with cancer cells or different compounds, drug screenings, as the cells react to those drugs, they will change their shape. They will change how the cell-cell interactions of their tight junctions. And that in turn changes the impedance of that current. And that's what we measure. So we're measuring basically changes in cells based on changes in the electrical current.
Very cool. I think I'm sold if they can give me superhuman strength. Any luck with that? No.
I don't know. Someone has to come up with the treatment and then we'll test it with our system and then we'll let you know. But
all right. Yeah. Let me know. Actually, I don't know if I want to be the first guinea pig. That's normally the person who doesn't recover from it. Maybe I should wait a little bit longer and let it be
time tested. That's true. That's true. You don't want to be the first in the human trials.
Yeah. You don't want to be an early adopter on everything. Well, Kat, let's dive into now some competition. So you know, you're teaching this class, you're coaching, you're training strongman yourself 3 days a week. When did you get into your first competition and kind of was that first competition that kind of gave you the bug on like, whoa, I want to see how far I can take the sport, let alone just the training?
Wow. So I jumped in right away. So I think that seminar we did was in, it was in April. And then in June, there was an unsanctioned competition. A local gym was just doing a strongman competition. And I was like, hey, let's do it. I just jumped right in.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was like, we're going to do this. And then at the same time, I also signed up for a competition in September, which was a sanctioned competition. And so sanctioned competitions means that it qualifies you for like nationals. So that's kind of like, if you're familiar with like powerlifting federations, it's kind of like it was the one U.S. federation at the time. And that was basically your jumping off point if you wanted to, you know, become world's strongest woman. So I did this first one in June, and I had a blast. We got a few girls from CrossFit also competed. I ended up winning, and I was like on cloud nine. I couldn't believe it.
So you'd gone from watching bootleg videos in your youth of the world's strongest man, and now here you are on the podium winning your first competition.
Yeah, and they gave out huge trophies. Oh my God, I felt so cool.
Was this at Dykes? Was that Cutting Edge?
No, this was at Perth's Ultimate Strongman competition. So just out past Amsterdam, it was just a gym out there.
Oh, okay. That's always the coolest thing about powerlifting and strongman competitions, when you get this giant plaque trophy of like some giant monster person holding a dumbbell or barbell over their head. And then in weightlifting meets, you get a little tiny medallion.
Yeah, I think I've seen a lot of powerlifting trophies and weightlifting trophies. And it's basically, I used to bowl when I was in high school, and they look like bowling trophies. They're like the quintessential trophy, you know? But then when I moved to strongman, I was like, oh my God, it's like a statue. It was a statue of like a bulldog in a weightlifting belt, like crushing a plate.
That was amazing.
It was crazy. So strongman, I don't know what, strongman just decided they're going to go this crazy way and have like the most intense trophies.
See, weightlifting needs to get on that. Like, I want intense trophies. I want trophies that you're going to have to like, oh man, I have to walk all the way to my car with this thing. You know, like that's the type of trophies I want.
Yeah. The other thing they do, I have a lot of weapons in my basement, katanas, machetes, random axes. Like, they like to give out weapons, sharp weapons.
Okay, I changed my mind. I don't want the trophy. I want weapons. Yeah, that, like, how cool would that be? You win a weightlifting meet and you get a pair of nunchucks or something else like that.
Yeah, I just saw it. It's purple and pink, and it has a little plaque on it. I don't even know what competition it was. I think it was Green Mountain Strongest Man or something. And it's in my closet. It's pretty cool. But
that's amazing. So that first meet, you meet it, you're hooked. You got one in September. Oh, yeah. How'd the one in September go?
The one in September, that one was crazy. So this one was sanctioned. So let's just say the level of competition was like exponentially bigger. A girl there actually went for the axle press world record. It was like 220 she was going for. I think she hit 10, but she missed 220. So the competition was insane. So much heavier and harder than the June meet. So I ended up coming in third, and I qualified for nationals. I don't know how I did it.
You're good, you're talented. You've been watching it for years, so you channeled some of that energy.
Yeah, I must have. I was very good. I did the axle press. I think I pressed 140, and I think that was good enough for third place in that event. And then I think I came in second on the deadlift. It was like an 18-inch silver dollar deadlift where the ends can kind of swing. I think I did 400 on that. And ended up coming in third. And then for stones, I was so new and so green that I had bought tacky, and I was like, I'm going to use this tacky because it will help my stones. And I put so little on my hands. I don't even know if it helped at all, but I ended up coming in third in that event. So I guess I got third overall, but it was funny because I had all this tacky all over my hands, and then I had to drive home, and the girls there were like, oh, do you have tacky remover? And I'm like, no, I'm going to go wash my hands in the bathroom. They're like, oh no, honey, soap will not take that off. That is on you forever unless you have baby oil or WD-40.
Oh my God. You're stuck to your steering wheel.
And I'm like, oh no. And they're like, oh, you come here. You come right here. You take this baby oil. You take this. Wash. They helped me. They took me under their wing. It was like immediate, like, oh, you're new? Oh, we'll help you. Come here.
Well, that's so good to hear, because like a sport like that, that's what you need. And really, that's what any of our barbell or strength sports need. It's like, you see someone who's green, take them under your wing and help them out. Give them a nice kind word or two, and because you want people to stay in the sport.
Absolutely. And I mean, that experience stuck with me. And now if I meet somebody new, it's, do you need tape? Do you need this? Do you need that? Like, I mean, I will help a direct competitor because I know what it meant to me when I was new. So I try to embody that now when I compete. If there's somebody new, I really try to help them. And I think the sport has continued to be like that. And it's one of the things I love. about strong women.
Yeah, there's a very strong, close-knit community. I love that too. Now, so that, those are your first two meets, non-sanctioned and sanctioned, doing pretty good, qualifying for nationals. Now, what's the road to Worlds look like? I'm assuming that's your highest placement on your resume is fifth at Worlds, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's see. In 2017, things kind of split in the sport. So there used to be just North American Strongman Corp. And that was the only place that you could go. You would compete. If you competed at a local show and came top three, you'd qualify to go to the national meet. And from there, you would qualify to go to the Arnold World Championships. I did do that in 2016 and 2017. In 2016, I came eighth in my weight class, and then I qualified for the Arnold. But the year I came fifth, that was the year it split. So there was two federations, and I competed in the other federation. And I came in fifth at Nationals that year, and then fifth at Worlds. Either federation, if you're competing, if someone listening wants to compete, the first thing to do is to sign up for a local meet. And then you will need to come in, depending on that meet, depending on what level it is, either top three or it could be top two, to get a qualifying spot at the national meet. Then once you're at the national meet, it depends. The year I went, top five went to Worlds. So I got in there in that last spot. So top five went to Pro Women's Worlds that year. And then once you're at Pro Women's Worlds, you win that. And then you're basically your world's strongest woman.
World's strongest woman.
Or at least one of the three that can exist at any point.
Yeah, that's always interesting to me because, you know, like in weightlifting, we just have the one federation in mm-hmm. the States. And then there's the international governing body. It's always interesting to me in powerlifting and in strongman how there's such a fracturing at times. Mm-hmm. Well, why is that in strongman? Was that just a disagreement on the rules and egos and people wanted to split and do their own thing?
I don't know the whole story, but I do know that North American Strongman Corp, I believe, I don't know who owned it or what, but it was a married couple and they divorced. So now the Dion Wessels runs Strongman Corp and Willie Wessels runs United States Strongman. So I don't know the story with that, but I think, you know, they divorced and that's why, you know, she obviously loved running that and she has done a lot for the sport. And then obviously, I don't think he wanted to give that up. He loved running strongman shows and all that. So then he started his own federation. So
it's almost like strongman was another child stuck in this tumultuous situation.
It was. They wanted joint custody. I guess the bright side to it is there have been a lot more opportunities now for everyone and especially women on both sides. So, I mean, I applaud both of them.
If they're both doing a good job,
they both love and care about the athletes, and I think they both want to better the sport. So I have competed in both, you know, with great, great results and also, you know, well run and all that. So,
So either one will do.
I would say either one would do. It kind of depends on where an athlete wants to go. I think with Strongman Corp, I think there's more opportunities for certain weight classes. And then I think with USS, there might be more opportunities for certain weight classes with USS. I certainly know one of the big aspirations in my life was to go to the Arnold World Strongman Championships at the Arnold Expo. And the only way you can get there is through Strongman Corp. So I did compete there and I went to the Arnold World Championships, and that was an amazing experience. I'm looking to go back.
Oh yeah. I was just there this past spring in March with a bunch of weightlifters, and it was obviously different, you know, than because the vendors and stuff weren't there. I don't know if you came out. Tell me about your Arnold experience. Did you see Arnold? Was he there?
He was there. He walked through while we were competing. I didn't like get to say hello or shake his hand or anything, but he came through the strong woman arena as, you know, everything was going on. And it was like, oh man, you just see like all these people around him and he's taking videos and things like that. And it was just a really cool experience just to be there with the vendors. It is just like unparalleled. There's just so many people and just so much to see. I think the year I went was the first year that women had pro women on main stage.
Very cool.
Like they do the guys, their Arnold Classic, and then the women had their own competition. And I remember watching that live and it was just like, oh my God. Like, I just remember thinking, I want to work so hard. I want to one day get there. And I'm still working on it.
Hey, I think you're going to get there. Describe to me your mindset in competition. Like you're at the Worlds or you're at the Arnolds, you know, like I've already had a couple people on the show and they've described, you know, like having tunnel vision and other things, being maybe a more of a quiet competitor or like someone who's getting rowdy. What kind of competitor are you and what is your mindset going into the competition overall?
My mindset is always to, I am competitive and I want to say that I always want to win and I never think, you know, I'm going to lose. I always go in wanting to win. But for me, I think what has helped me mentally is I go in thinking I'm going to give my best performance today and whatever that best performance is, I will be happy with it because I can only do what I can do, you know? And so I'll have an idea in my mind of how heavy I want to lift or how many I want. And I'm going to go for that, or I'm going to go for a little bit more. And I just say, I'm going to give my best performance and I don't get amped up. I like to remain quiet and calm. If I get too, you know, like aroused and like that, you know, just like too amped up. I think it like has the opposite effect for me. For me, it's like calm, cool, collected, do what you came here to do and do it the best that you can do it. And that's kind of like my mindset.
How do you deal with failure when things don't go your way at a competition? Maybe you wanted to get a certain number of stone over the bar, but it just didn't happen.
I feel like when I'm competing, if like something's not going, like if I do something and it's just not going right, it's just like, okay, just adjust on the fly. If this isn't working, try something else and don't like the last thing you want, don't get frustrated. Just keep going for it. And sometimes that is just take a step back, take a deep breath and then go for it again. But like on stones, I've been there where like, my grip, like, why isn't my grip staying? So you just adjust a little bit and just, you just try what works. And the worst thing you can do, don't panic. I tell myself that all the time, just keep trying it. And if you keep trying it and you can't, then that's just what you could do that day. Don't let that affect the next event. When that event's finished, it's gone. Like if you fail, like if you have an overhead press, and I had, when I first started, notoriously, I was bad at overhead press. An overhead press is always event number one, right? So I learned, I was like, you have to just put that aside. If you don't do good in that first event, just put that aside because there's four really great events about to happen. And if you let that affect you, then you're going to ruin your best events. So
yeah, you can't take that into the truck pull or whatever else is going to come up. Do the events, are they always the same? So you said that it's always the press overhead. What are the events if there are like a set of official events?
It's always different. So there's never like a set five events. It's always five events. And kind of the prescription is usually there's an overhead that's usually always first. Then there's usually a deadlift. Usually deadlift is the second thing, second or third thing that you do. There's always usually a loading event and the loading event is usually last. For stones, if you're using tacky, it's messy. So that's probably why it's last. But yeah, if you're loading kegs or stones or things like that, that's usually always last. And then there's usually two events in there that can kind of swap around. There's always like a moving event. So a moving event could be a farmer's walk. It could be a yoke. It could be a Husafell carry for distance. And so those two events kind of swap around as to whatever sounds fun to the promoter, or whatever he thinks will pair well with the other three events that they have planned.
I see. So you have a general idea going into any of these events. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to need to do something like this. Do they announce them in advance? So you know, okay, if I'm going to Worlds, I know that there's going to be a yoke carry and I need to train yoke carry. Or is it like a secret until the day of the event or something like that? Because like sometimes CrossFit's like that where you know, you don't know what yeah. the event's going to be.
So the nice thing with Strongman is usually the events are released when they release the entry. So usually that's 3-4 months in advance. You know exactly which implements you're going to be using that day. Of course, every Strongman competition is always like, things can change. And sometimes things do change last minute if there's a problem with the equipment. But in general, you sort of know exactly what you're going to be using.
Yeah, so you have a good idea going in. And then you probably shape all of your training around that. So it's like, okay, yokes are up. There's no farmer's carries. Are you saying goodbye to farmer's carries for a while? Or do they still get incorporated into the overall program?
If I have yoke, I'm probably focusing on yoke for at least, 6 weeks in advance, maybe 8 weeks. It depends on what shape I feel like I am in yoke. In general, when I'm just training and not for a competition, I'm throwing in some strongman stuff here and there just to stay fresh and everything and just because it's fun. But then once there's a competition, you usually dial in on those specific events and then you usually train the events under mostly competition conditions. So you want to set up the exact event and then you're going to time yourself. Like if it's deadlift for reps, you'll take a percentage of what you'll be doing that day and you'll take that for, 30 to 45 seconds, as many as you can do. Things like that to kind of simulate the event, but not give you the fatiguing aspect of doing all the events,
Yeah, because you still have to recover.
Right. Yeah. The last thing you want to do is, a week or 2 weeks before, hey, let's do a run through at comp weight. Well, that might work out, or you might fatigue yourself so badly that you'll then do better in your simulation than you will on actual contest day. So I like to spread things out and I don't like to do competition weights too close to the actual competition day. And I certainly don't like to do all the events on one day if I can help it.
That sounds like an easy rookie mistake to make. Okay, I'm signed up for my first strongman event. Let me just do the event,
Yeah, like pulling a heavy single like 1 week before, like that you think you're going to hit in competition. I've seen that go bad a lot. It's not something you don't want to be pulling your heaviest 1 week out. You want to be pulling your heaviest that day. I have made some of those rookie mistakes and I have watched as others have made those rookie mistakes. I would say, in general, you want to hammer the events that you're going to be doing, and then you can throw a few things in. Like if farmers walks are fun, you might do them, but you don't want to do them heavy. You're probably working speed, technique. You're not doing heavy farmers walks if there's no farmer walk in your event, 4 weeks out from competition.
Yeah, there's just no need to. So let's dive deeper into your training. Let's just do like a snapshot of like a week. How many days are you working out? Is it all just strongman implements, or are you still doing like traditional barbell training, traditional Metcons? And when I say traditional, I mean like, all right, you're doing like a CrossFit Metcon of like some wall balls, burpees, and pull-ups, or is it just all strongman implements all the time? Well, what's it look like a week?
So usually I train 4 days a week. Every so often, maybe I'll try to throw a fifth a day in there, but if you're doing a lot of strongman events, I find that fifth day can be very important for recovery. So in general, something more like taking an active recovery of like walking would be better than doing like a light workout or like a light WOD. So in general, I have one day that's usually, like an upper body pushing day where I'll be doing like clean and jerks, push presses. It's all about overhead. And then I'll probably do maybe some accessory work. I might pair that with an event. I might pair it with like stone to shoulder, something like that, light. Then I usually do like a heavy pull day. So I usually will do like a press day and then like a deadlift day. And usually on deadlift day, I'm focusing mostly on deadlifts. And I'll try to like minimize any other like deadlifty type thing. So let's say
like a tire or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, like stones on deadlift day. I have done that. And a lot of times because stones just like you're deadlifting and then you're deadlifting a big stone and then you're loading it. I found for me, it's better if I don't do stones and deadlifts together. But that's a personal thing for me. I know probably some people who'd be probably fine with that. So it's usually like a deadlift. It'll be like a heavy pulling day. And then I'll take, you know, like I'll take a rest day and then it will be squat day. And I'll do squats. Probably I'll throw an event in there. A lot of times I like to do sandbag carries, keg carries, on squat day, or like, sled pulls or sled pushes, things like that. And then the fourth day is, it's kind of a mishmash. It depends on how many events I've done throughout the week. The fourth day is a lot of times event day, where I'll pick one or two events and then I'll kind of maybe try to make a little like strongman wad at the end.
So that's one or two events that are coming up from the next competition.
Yeah. Or if there's no competition, just events in general,
just ones that you've done in the past, you know, like, hey, yeah. it's like a benchmark testing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just something like if I'm not doing a competition, just something that, sounds fun. And something that I think will kind of translate to whatever my goal is for like that kind of cycle. Like, I think, sometimes like my priority is like, conditioning. So I'll probably be doing a lot of sandbag carries. I love those for conditioning. They really kill you.
Oh yeah.
Cause you know, if you're carrying that for max distance, like when you're carrying something, it's heavy. You have to deadlift it off the ground. You have to put it in your lap. You have to carry it, but then you have to breathe. And I think conditioning is sometimes neglected in strongman. So that's when I'll do like events and I'll do like a little wad. It won't even necessarily be like a heavy wad, but it'll just kind of have some kind of strongman implement in it.
From what I remember, like strongman wads, you kind of feel like you've done manual labor. Like, so it like gives you a different type of feel. Like I remember like my arms being all black from, you know, the tire and the dirt rubbing off on you. You know, you feel like you've just been working on a farm all day. And so you just feel accomplished in a different way than if you just did like a CrossFit workout. That's what I always remember.
Yeah. It's, you feel like you've really, you've really done something. Like you've moved something big, like all over the place. Right. Like, a lot of times I like to do, for these, like, it'll be like a keg carry, like carry this keg and then like do some burpees. And then maybe you'll do like a super light dumbbell for a few reps and then you'll rest for a minute. And then you'll do like four rounds of that. It's not super heavy, but it really gets you, it really, I mean, it is very CrossFit-esque. And I find that aspect of my start in strongman, I find CrossFit very hard to shake. I really love it.
Hey, I mean, it makes you fit for life. Like you can do it for life. Just like with any of these things. I mean, you can do, is there such a thing as masters strongman and woman?
Absolutely.
See, there you go.
Absolutely. And anyone can do it. Yep. Over 40 division for women. And then I think with men, it's usually over 40, but then like when you get to the big shows, I think there's an over 40 and an over 50. And I think sometimes if they get enough competitors, an over 60 division.
Awesome. Well, what are some of your best training lifts and best competition lifts? And I don't even know what type of event or lift to ask on. So like, I mean, like things like stone to shoulder and carries, like what are the things that you're most proud of that you're like, man, I can't believe I just picked that up and moved that from there to there.
Well, I think probably everyone can understand deadlift. So my best deadlift ever is 410 pounds.
Now that was at the,
you were there.
I believe. That was at the CrossFit total event that we did that. I have that. It's on my notes right here. I was going to bring it up at some point. I'm showing you my notes. Like that was That's, I believe, is the heaviest deadlift ever done by a lady in the gym, in the history of our gym. I don't think, actually, I know that no one has beat that since. I remember that. That was quite the deadlift. And I think you let out the most badass warrior yell during it
that,
as well.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of known for that. I don't know why. It's just sometimes it just seems like it's easier if I just let it out. I can't hold it in. I just have to like yell sometimes.
That was
it's really
you heavy. Know that
a
was
lot of
like,
people do that, right?
That was before the time of like everyone busting out their phones. You know, like
there's no video of that. I can't even prove it happened other than there was a lot of witnesses.
Yep. I was one of them. I saw it. I was directly in front of you. I was probably towards the back of the room. I know exactly where you were. You were at the very back end of the room. And I was probably up front getting all of the trophies ready and stuff. So I was sitting back behind that desk and Dyke was probably judging you and whatnot. And mm-hmm. I think I heard it first and saw it second, you know, cause you let out that giant warrior yell, but that was a highlight of that event. I definitely remember that.
Yeah. That was a huge milestone for me. Cause I'd been chasing that for a long time. I would say the next, my favorite is I did a 275 pound stone to a 48 inch platform. I do have a video of that.
Very cool.
That was huge for me. I didn't make it look easy, but I did it.
Yeah. Hey, it's not
felt heavy. PR. It looked heavy, but it got done.
Yeah. PRs don't always look pretty, you know, like sometimes, you know, we have athletes at the gym where they're like, you know, like, it didn't look the way I wanted it to. And I'm like, well, that was max effort, you know, max effort. Yeah. Is it going to look pretty?
If it looks perfect, it's probably not really your max, right? Like you don't want it to look like, you don't want it to look really bad, you know, but
yeah, it's really this isn't these aren't aesthetic sports, you know, like these are like really, you know, like we're lifting heavy weights and stuff's going to happen when you're lifting heavy weights.
Yeah. I will say the event, I think for me, maybe most people don't even know because I don't even know if I posted this on like Instagram. But in 2016, when I went to Nationals, there was a Husafel carry. It was a 225 pound Husafel stone. And you had to carry that for as long as you could. And that year I went to Nationals, I was just 6 months out of ankle surgery. So I'd only been training really for 4 months when I went. And Husafel, in my mind, was my worst event. I'd been training and training. It was okay. I'd been going maybe 100 to 150 feet. And I was really nervous when I went into this Nationals event. But I was like, I'm just going to go till I literally fall down, till I literally can't go anymore. I said,
nothing to lose.
Yeah, just die on the floor, Kat. Just, you know, figuratively.
Yeah.
And these Husafel implements, they were made custom for that event. So no one had really touched them. So I had never touched one of this shape. So I did practice and I kind of got where I felt pretty good. And I feel like when I think of the best event I've ever done in my whole life, this event, I went 400 feet with this 225. And they had these Flow Elite announcers announcing. And I just remember I was just moving. I wasn't thinking about anything except one foot in front of the other, toe past the line, turn, toe past the line, turn. And I'm just going. And there was one part where I just heard the announcer go, oh, what? We only have Catherine left. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like,
cause there's multiple lanes and you're going.
Yeah, there was six lanes and like seven heats. So it wasn't the only heat, but, just the fact that I was still going and everybody else was done. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm still going. And then I did. And I think I did another 100 feet after that. And I was going to turn and go more, but I lost my grip and I lost it. I came in third in that event out of 45 girls. When I thought I was going to come maybe dead last.
That's amazing. That's a testament to just trying, you know, just go out there and put your best foot forward. And you didn't let your circumstances hold you back. Mm-hmm. They didn't define you in that moment. And so many people could be like, and you could have easily have been like, okay, I hurt my ankle. And here's my pity party about it. and I'm going to go out there and make it 50 feet and put it down. And it's because of my ankle, and I have that excuse, and I can, like, that's what I'll carry with me. And you were just the complete opposite. That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't win that event, but I was happy to come in so close to the top to actually have a top three finish. And then because I did so well in that event, I think it helped me overall, because that was the nationals I qualified for the Arnold. And that's a story in and of itself.
Let's talk about it.
Because we're at the banquet, and me and my coach, we don't know what the placings are. We know I'm so close. We know the top nine girls, I think, are going.
So they don't announce this at like the end of the last competition. Like, they still have to like do all these calculations and stuff.
Yeah, they do. So the first four events, they tell you your placing and they show you your overall points. But after the fifth event, they don't post it. You wait till the banquet. So it's a surprise. Like, ooh, who's going to win?
Oh my goodness. That would be so nerve wracking.
Yes. Yeah, so nobody knows where they've placed. I mean, the top girls kind of know like where they are, but they don't know for sure. So I did the Husafell. I thought that was going to be my worst, and then it ended up being probably my best of the whole week. And then the next event was a stone and keg load. And, just on how that went and how I felt compared to the rest of the field, I knew I had done very good, probably didn't win it, but I had done very good. And I knew that overall my points were going to be close to qualifying. I knew I wasn't going to come in top three or anything like that, but just qualifying for the worlds. That was my goal. And so we get to this banquet and they start announcing, okay, the qualifiers. And I know that I'm probably going to be the first name called because I'm so close. Maybe the first, maybe the second name. So they go through and I'm not the first name called or the second. And I'm, so I'm like, oh, okay, well, They call me on the first three names. I'm not top five. I'm not top three. So I'm like, oh, all right. Okay. That, next year. But it really crushed me because I had no expectations going in, because of the ankle surgery. I was like, oh, if I come top 10 or top 15, I'll be happy. But then I kind of got my hopes up a little. And so then I was a little crushed that I didn't get it. So then everyone's filtering out. They post the score sheet so everyone can actually see the scores in the finals. And everyone's filtering out. There's almost no one left and we're leaving. And they say, can Catherine Toniati-Anilovic come to the podium? Like, they either think I did something bad or something good is about to happen. And they went up and they said someone looked at the score sheets and they had scored her incorrectly, which gave her better points than me. And so because she came forward, they had scored her as like 400 something feet, but she only had gone, I think, 100 and something feet.
Oh my goodness, that's a big...
Right, so she ended up getting more points on that event, which pushed me out of the top nine. Once they corrected that, I was in the top nine. So...
That is so... Kudos to that lady for being honest. Yes. And
I'll name drop her, Katie O'Connor. Like, thank you. I will be forever grateful. I mean, that is what you hope. I mean, just... it takes someone, with a lot of integrity to do that. But yeah. They did, and what I'm so glad that they did do is they said because she came forward, she also got to keep her spot.
Oh, that is so, I love the way strongman competition works. Like, okay, you have one federation, the married couple that runs it get divorced, but everyone's happy, everyone's still friends, everyone's trying to grow the sport. For prizes, you get swords and machine guns and katanas and giant trophies. And then everyone is just so wonderful to everyone. I mean, you're making me want to do strongman. Like, it sounds like a wonderful sport.
I mean, when she did that, she probably thought she was losing her spot and they let her keep it. And I was so happy. And when I got there, I didn't know who she was. I had no clue who she was. I looked up online and I was like, I think I know what she looks like. And we hugged at the Arnold. I was like, thank you so much. I just have to like say thank you and hug you. And we hugged and she was like, of course. She was like,
That is so amazing. And she probably brought, she probably brought on so much good energy from the universe on her going into Arnold. Like, so she got to go anyways. That's fantastic.
Yeah. She's very of course, I mean, she did this wonderful thing, but she's also really nice. She was very nice when I met her as well. So.
Yeah, and now you see, now there's a new connection. You probably never would have talked to the, to her before. Yeah. And now it's like,
yeah, if I ever saw her at an event, I would, you know, if she needed anything, I'd be like, anything you need a drink, you need food, you need, did you lose your straps? Do you need some tacky? Anything you want? Like, that's, you know,
that's fantastic.
Friends for life.
Yeah. That's such a great story. And then you guys both went on to the Arnold and got to compete at the Arnold, and you're at this historic Arnold, because it's the first time the ladies are on the main stage, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the first time there was like a pro women's division. So I was competing as the amateur, and then top four in the amateur, they compete on the main stage, and also they get their pro card. So then if you come top four, then you're eligible to compete on that pro stage. So you're basically like, it's like, yeah.
What does it mean when you get a pro card? Like is that like a instant pass into a competition? Or you just have that status, you can get into meets when they overfill? Like, what does that pro card do?
So in Strongman Corporation specifically, so in Strongman Corporation, I'm still technically an amateur because I have not earned my pro card there. There, basically it means that you can only compete in pro shows, but generally when you compete in pro shows, they pay you to compete. So there's prize money. In the case of, I think, like the men, I think if you're competing in a pro show, not only are you competing for money, but they're going to pay your travel expenses. You're not earning a living from it, certainly. But
they're taking care of you because they're trying to grow the sport. And they're like, right. Hey, these are our fixtures, our celebrities in the sport. We got to keep them going and help them out, you know, any way we can.
Right. Yeah. Because generally when you're a pro, you're the entertainment. Like if you're doing a show and you're in the middle of an expo, it's like, ooh, to watch the pros, that's like for people to watch, that's entertainment. So they pay you because you're part of the attraction. It's not just a competition. So yeah, and I mean, it's strongman is an expensive hobby, as I think most strength sports are.
Oh yeah.
So just to have even a couple $100s or to have like your travel paid, it's a huge deal. And in the other, in USS, I'm not really sure. So if you go to nationals and then you place high enough, you get invited to a pro show. So I competed at a pro women's show with USS. Is that like pro status? I guess, but it doesn't really get you, I think, anything else. It's like you're a pro competing at this pro show. And when I did it, it was in the middle of Beale Street in Tennessee. And we were like the attraction, and they had like an announcer, and they were hyping us up, and you know, there was a big crowd. And in Tennessee, you can drink liquor on the street, so everyone was like having a great time.
It's a party.
Yeah, it was a party. So it was pretty cool.
So it's a little different in that. Federation.
It's a little different in that federation. Because if you win that show, you win, it's great because you win, I think, $2,000 or something like that. There's a nice prize purse, but it doesn't qualify you, I think, for any future shows or anything like that. Whereas I think with Strongman Corp, they do throw specifically like they call them Platinum Plus shows. Those are for pros where only pros can compete. Like I couldn't sign up. You have to have your pro card to compete. And then there's other shows throughout the year where you have to have that pro status or you can't sign up.
Well, I think soon you're going to be ultimate pro, keep training and doing things like you are. Like who on the pro level, men and women's sides, are like your top role models? You're like, man, that's my favorite lifter. I want to be like them. Ooh. I want to perform like them. Who are the tops for you? Let's do the men first.
Men. I mean, right now, I don't know if he's like kind of semi-retired, but I mean, Big Z, Zydrunas Savickas. He's my man. He's who I root for. But I haven't seen him on the circuit in a while. He didn't compete, I think, at the Arnold this year.
Yeah, I've heard like rumors on like he might be done, you know.
I mean, he is getting kind of up there for a strongman. Usually when you get, I think, like close to 40, that's usually, I feel like, where you're your strongest. And then you just kind of accumulate injuries. I've just through watching over the years and things, like, you start to accumulate injuries and then it's so hard to recover. And then you kind of, it's like a slow decline. I think he has done marvelously. I can't believe
he's
done so well.
And I imagine that for some of those guys to be that big for that long, you know, like, it's got to take a toll on the inside of your body too, where you're like,
I want to
raise my kids and see them, you know, like, some things like that would be going through my mind.
Yeah. You have a few outliers. Like, I think Mark Felix didn't get into it till he was 40 and he's like 50 now, or he might be beyond 50. I'm probably getting the age really wrong, but anyway, just to think, like, of my dad at like 50 years old, but then Mark Felix is like so incredible, like strong. And like, I'm like, yeah, when I'm 50, I want to be that good.
that too. Yeah.
But yeah, so I think Zydrunas is my favorite on the guy side. And then
let's stick with Zydrunas. In following him and looking at him as inspiration for the sport, what is one thing that you feel like you've learned from watching him that you put into yourself?
He's definitely a guy, he doesn't get hyped. I don't feel like I've ever seen him go crazy or get amped up. He does his thing. He stays focused. And then he lifts and it's incredible. Like, if you see him do a log lift, I mean, there's not a lot of grunting or like screaming or, you know.
He kind of does it. He nods, yes, that is good. And he walks away.
Yeah. And I was like, that's how I want to be. You know, I just want to be calm, cool, and collected. Just very focused and go up there and lift. I'd love to have the longevity in the sport that he's had. I mean, he has been around. I've been watching him since like he wasn't even like a contender, since like he didn't even make the finals. I've been watching it that long. And then to see him just like his rise is like, oh man, like, I just hope that I can be competitive for as long as he's competitive and stay healthy and all that.
That's pretty cool that you got to watch him go through his entire career. It's almost, you know, from a fan standpoint, and then as like a colleague, you know, like a fellow athlete, it's like you're doing it with him.
Yeah. I met him at the Arnold that year and it was like crazy because it was like so starstruck. But like, just to think that I'm like in a sport where like, oh yeah, Zydrunas is, he's just right over there. You know, I did a competition. This was, I think, before Thor was the mountain. I think it was 2013. I did one in New York City, Gotham's Strongest, and Thor was just there doing an exhibition lift. And it was like, and it's like just these incredible experiences you just have. It's almost like they're not like celebrities. They're just like fellow competitors, even though you're not really competing with them. You have sense of that. They're more accessible than like NFL stars or NBA stars. It's like they're just around and they're nice and they'll, you know, they're
using the same warm-up gear you're using in the
it's really fun. It's one of the fun parts of the sport. I feel like it's pretty easy to meet your heroes.
That's what I love about all these strength sports, that everyone's very humble, down to earth, and accessible, like you said. Well, what about from the ladies' side? Who's the role model there?
Ooh. So I think my favorite is Leifa Ingles. So she won the trophy. I think it was the Katie Sandwina trophy for the Pro Strong Women at the Arnold. She won the first year. And that first year they had a mix. They had a lot of, in strong women, there's weight classes. So lightweight, middleweight, heavyweight. And she was a middleweight girl and I compete middleweight. So middleweight in that is between 160 and 180. And so they had heavyweights, middleweights and lightweights, but everybody was using the same weights, which isn't typical. And usually in a strong competition, there's different weights for each weight class. But in this pro show, everyone was using the same weights. And the fact that she won that year, as like a middleweight, just in my mind, it made me think, oh, wow, like you know, if she did it, you know, women like me can do it. Because I was thinking, oh, well, I mean, some of these girls are so strong, and they're much bigger than me. And it's intimidating sometimes, to think, oh, you know, could I win a pro show as a middleweight? And she did it. And I was just, I mean, it was amazing to see. She's so incredibly strong. And I think she's also like an incredibly nice, sweet person. So she's currently my favorite, kind of the person I look up to. I mean,
And what have you learned, like, through following her? Kind of the same question I asked about Zydrunas, you know, like what things about her do you try to carry on with yourself?
I feel like she's another, calm, cool, and collected lifter. I don't know. I feel like she's a good role model for the sport. She's definitely, I think, a person that helps her fellow competitors. And who, you know, if you're a new person coming in, she would be right there, to help you and kind of, you know, take you under her wing.
So she's like this star, but she's still like, I'm gonna take care of everybody.
Yeah, I haven't had an extended like period like to talk to her, but from my sense, she's incredibly humble. And that to me, like, that's one of the things I like look for, in competitors, people who are just so great and so strong and maybe have reason to, you know, kind of boast, but are incredibly humble and who don't forget, you know, where they started and how important it is to new people just starting out when, you know, like a big name or someone, you know, very strong kind of takes you under the wing and helps you and thinks, you know, it's worth it to help you, you know, like.
Yeah, neither she nor Zydrunas seem like they have big egos or anything right. Like that. Would you say that, you know, like, do you think it's good for the sport? Like, what's going on right now with all the trash talking and the egos through the roof and the YouTube videos and things like that?
I mean, it's like the side that, like, I don't like at all. I think it will bring new people to the sport, but I wonder like what impression they're getting of the sport. I watch, my husband watches professional wrestling. And so I watch that. And so I think, is this all fake? Is it all like,
exactly. I was saying it's turning into the WWE. Yeah.
Is it all like fake rivalry and they're just manufacturing it because it makes it more interesting for the general public? I certainly think like that lift, like Thor's lift, that was great for the sport because it was just broadcast in so many homes. So many people were seeing it. I thought people might get a good impression of the sport. The trash talking though, I don't know. I mean, I feel.
Yeah, it's like, I agree with you 100%. When he did the deadlift, you know, okay. Like I had said on another show that I didn't think he was going to do it. But then, of course, I wanted to see him do it. And I think it's great for the sport that it brought so much attention to strongman. But then in his interview, when he said that he was going to knock Eddie Hall's effing head off, I'm like, all right, did we need that? You know, yeah. like I don't know about that. But then again, I'm excited to watch him fight because like you're pulling me both ways. I feel like I want to see all of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, will I watch the fight? Probably, because it's two strongmen, right? I would probably not watch any other MMA or boxing fight, but I probably would watch that. I don't know. I just feel like some of the insults are getting like really personal and really like, you know, it's not just like, I don't know. It's not just like standard, you know, trash talking. I feel like things are getting a little personal.
Yeah. I personally think that it's like you said, I think that it might be fake because, you know, like if you and I were going to have a big pay-per-view match, you know, mm-hmm. and we're going to have an MMA match, it's James right. and Catherine one-on-one, then of course I would go to you and I'd be like, Kat, okay, you can say these things 6 months out. You can say these things 3 months out. You know, you yeah. can't talk about, you know, my family until a week out. You know, like we'll have agreements. Right. And we both know that nothing's personal. All we are trying to do right now is you and I are going to get paid. So let's get some attention to this. Let's make people excited about it. Let's get on the news. Oh my goodness, these two people said what? And then after it, we'll shake hands and we'll smoke cigars in the back room while we look at our bank accounts.
Right, yeah, while we count the seven figures.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I'm a little torn on that. I don't know if I'm a person who could trash talk, but maybe if you gave me seven figures, I would, but.
Yeah, seven figures and a list of things.
Yeah, I don't like to do that. And I, even like when I'm in a competition, like I like to just be nice to everyone. Even if like that's the person that like, I need to beat you to qualify for nationals, like I'm not going to be mean to you. I'm going to be nice to you. I'm not going to sabotage you. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to sabotage you or anything.
Yeah, I could never see you doing something like that. Who do you think is going to win the fight?
My money would be on Thor to win the fight, but I don't know. I don't know.
It's tough. I'm on Team Eddie.
I feel like, I don't know, right off the bat, I feel like Eddie is very quick. He's faster. But I don't really know like what Thor's strengths or weaknesses would be for boxing. It's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Eddie's going to be a scrapper. He looks like a guy who like over there in Great Britain has been in many, many bar fights and probably was a bouncer, and his neck and head kind of connect in a way where I feel like he can just protect it. You know, I just feel like he's just going to get in there and do damage. And I just like his confidence. And if we are talking about the trash talking, he's way more entertaining to watch.
Yeah, he's probably better on the trash talking end. I don't know. I haven't seen the latest on it. I've heard that there has been more trash talking, but I haven't really followed that much.
Yeah.
But.
Well, we'll see. We'll see in a year from now. You know. All right. So you're saying Thor.
I'll say Thor.
We'll have to get a poll up to see what listeners think eventually. One last question for you. Like, I'm sure you've seen all kinds of amazing feats of strength competing and going to shows. What are some of the top things where you're like, I didn't think that was humanly possible, what I just witnessed now?
Let's see. I feel like, I'll call out first. I didn't see this in person, but I was glued to my TV for the most recent Arnold Pro Strong Woman Championships. And I think it was something like 34 reps that Jessica Fithen did with, I think it was 250 pound stone. She just kept putting it over the bar. It was like an insane, no tacky, like just that little towel tack that gives you just.
How many reps?
Like 35.
Holy cow.
Maybe, yeah, 34 or 35 reps. Either way, she did like 35 reps with 240. And it was kind of like, it was a battle, a stone battle. So you'd put one over and then the other guy on the other side would put one over, right? And you had 30 seconds to initiate the lift and get it over.
So that's strength and incredible endurance as well.
It took like 15 minutes. Like, yeah. Oh, you have to have conditioning. I mean, you have to be incredibly strong, but like you also need some conditioning. That was incredible. That was incredible. I would say anytime Zydrunas presses the Austrian oak, that's all like, if you ever watched Arnold Classic and you watch there's the two logs, there's the big log 450. And then there's the smaller log. And Zydrunas always takes that big log and he always presses it like four times and everyone else struggles to get like one. Or they don't even attempt it. They just go to the smaller log. And he just, with ease, right? He doesn't even jerk. He just push presses. It's just,
that's amazing.
Imagine if the man could push jerk. It would be incredible.
Yeah, that would be incredible. So those are the biggest things that you've seen where you're just like, are they human? Let's find out.
Yeah. Yeah. The two in most recent memory. I'm probably missing some. Probably missing some.
What do you think some of these people could like snatch and clean and jerk with just a regular bar? Like, could they like smash like the big world records for some of the heavyweights? Let's say on the clean and jerk.
Yeah, I think so. What's the Lasha is the men's?
Yeah, Lasha. It's like in the 250s or 260. It's like 263 or 264 or something like that.
Okay. So the world, the log record is 228, I believe, right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like 501 pounds with a log. Do I think if Zydrunas like practiced like the Olympic lifts, if he could like clean and jerk more?
See, that's the YouTube video I want to see. Like one of these guys who's retired and he's just like, yeah, I'll just try it, you know, just put it out there. And it's like a 600 pound clean and jerk with a little barbell and his hands are like the size of dinner plates.
Mm. I would say on the guy side, I feel like, yes, I feel like if they were to like, hey, I'm going to take a year and I'm going to learn the technique, you know, like really dial in the technique, I think they could. On the women's side, I don't really know. I mean, the women are incredibly, incredibly strong, but I just keep thinking, Tatiana
Kashi. Yeah.
193, it's like 400 pounds.
Over 400 pounds.
400 and something. I don't know if I've seen any women's lifts that are close enough to that. I've seen a 285 log press from Danielle Vahi, probably saying one of those is correct, I think.
Yeah.
She did 285 on a log press. I don't know, 400?
Yeah, that seems like a stretch.
That seems like a little bit of a stretch, whereas I feel, I don't know, like with Zydrunas, I feel like 228 versus what you said, 263.
Yeah.
It's a little closer, I think.
And I could be off. I'm just trying to go by memory. I know it's somewhere around that, but it's like, so it sounds like in this whole exchange, Tatiana's the best. She's has an unmatchable performance. Strongest lady like in history.
If we're talking not strongman, and listen, I love all strength sports. I love to watch weightlifting. When the world championships come on, I order ESPN3 for that month and I pay the extra to watch it. And I watched all. And I tell you, I get hyped to watch her. And when I watched her lift at 193, I was like blown away. I mean, she's my girl. She's my fave.
Oh yeah.
I don't think she'll be competing this year, though. I think Russia's banned. Well, also coronavirus, but.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Kat, this has been great catching up with you and learning your history and just talking all about strong women and strong man. You know, what I've been trying to do on this show is just get people from all over the strength community, you know. So we've had weightlifters on, we've had kettlebell folks on. We've had, of course, CrossFitters, and you are the first person from the strong woman and strong man community to come on. And we've had a couple shows talking about that whole deadlift and everything. So I'm like, you know what? I got to and have her talk about some of this stuff. So I'm so glad to get you on. Thank you for coming on. Where can people follow you and see some of the awesome lifts that you're doing?
So if you want to follow me on Instagram, my name is @strongcaddy. So that's strong and then cat, T-Y. So strong caddy. But I'm not caddy. I'm very nice.
I bet anyone listening right now is just like, yep, nicest person in the world. At a strongman event, say hello.
Yeah. And then, I mean, if you want to find me on Facebook, I have a very long name, Catherine Toniati Anilovich. if you wanted to find that, I will not spell that.
It'll be in the show. I think you will also have the title of the longest name on the show when I put up the episodes and whatnot. So you will have the longest title and the longest name. Look at all these records you're getting right now.
Records, I love it.
These might be put that on your wall. I'll send you a certificite.
Longest name in strongman. That's me.
There we go.
I don't know of any other ones in strongman that are longer, so I think I can legitimately hold that record.
There we go. It's you got to hang on to whatever you can get.
Absolutely.
Guys, thank you again for listening. Make sure you follow The Barbell Strikes Back on Instagram. Follow me, James A. McDermott. Head on over to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and a positive review if you think the show deserves it. Thank you again for listening. Kat, thank you one more time for coming on.
Thank you so much. I'm honored that you thought of me. And this was really fun. And thank you so much. And also honored to be the first strong man or strong woman on the show.
Definitely. It's exciting. We're going to have to get you back on as more things progress in strongman to talk about it.
All right. Great. Absolutely. I would love to be back if you'll have me. Hey, have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Thanks.